Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I'm now going to cover in this audio Psalms chapter 29. I will call this psalm Ascribe to the Lord Glory. The heading of the psalm is simply a Psalm of David. So this is the 28th straight Psalm of David that we've covered, starting with Psalm number 2. Psalm number 1 does not have an attributed author. So we start now with Psalms 29, verse 1. Ascribe to the Lord, O sons of the mighty, ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Now, what does ascribe mean? Well, when I said, hey, Google, Google said that ascribe means attribute to or put down to. Let's say attribute to. Attribute to the Lord glory and strength. Who is David speaking to? Who does David want to attribute to the Lord glory and strength? O sons of the mighty, he says. Well, what does that mean? Who are the sons of the mighty? The NIV translates the Hebrew word here as the mighty ones. Well, who is that? The NIV translates the same Hebrew word in Genesis 6:2 as sons of God. In Psalm 89:6, the NIV translates the word as heavenly beings. The NIV in Job chapter 1, verse 6 translates the word as angels. Well, the NIV Study Bible and Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that the sons of the mighty are most likely angels, and I think that's what they are. Gill suggests as an option it could refer to princes, or sons of the mighty, referring to chieftains in the land of Israel. So it could be either one. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Now, the whole rest of this psalm is going to describe the strong effects produced by a thunderstorm. So a thunderstorm will be used as a symbol of the strength of God. So we go now to verse 2. David says, ascribe to the Lord the glory due to his name. Worship the Lord in holy array. What does glory mean? What does it mean to ascribe to the Lord glory? Well, I looked up glory in dictionary.com, and that dictionary had some good definitions of glory. Here's one, adoring praise or worshipful thanksgiving. So David would be saying, ascribe to the Lord adoring praise or worshipful thanksgiving. Here's another definition from dictionary.com. Resplendent beauty or magnificence, as in the glory of autumn. So ascribe to the Lord resplendent beauty or magnificence, David would be saying. Another definition from dictionary.com, a state of great splendor, magnificence, or prosperity. So ascribe to the Lord splendor and magnificence. So we get the idea. And then David says in verse 2, worship the Lord in holy array. What does that mean? Well, the NIV translates it as worship the Lord in the splendor of his holiness, which is straightforward. The KJV translates it as worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. That's straightforward. The NASB says worship the Lord in holy array. So what does holy array mean? The NIV Study Bible says it's not really clear what David meant here. Some options that the NIV Study Bible provides. Option number one, David is saying, worship the Lord in holy attire. In other words, one's array, one's attire, what one is wearing, like priest garments. So he's using the priestly worship when they're dressed up in their linen garments. He was saying, do the same thing. Poetically speaking, of course, you wouldn't dress up like a priest, actually. Well, that's an idea. Another option the NIV Study Bible suggests is worship the Lord in a holy assembly. In other words, the people are arrayed in ranks and files around the Lord or in semicircles, however they are arrayed, but they are arrayed in a holy array because they're worshiping the Lord, so they're in a holy assembly. Well, whatever it means, the idea is clear. David is asking either angels or princes to worship God in the splendor of God's holiness and the beauty of his holiness in a holy array or dressed up in holy attire because God is holy. Holy, of course, means separate from the profane world and dedicated to a sinless God. We go now to Psalm 29, verses 3 through 6. David continues, the voice of the Lord is upon the waters. The God of glory thunders. The Lord is over many waters. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is majestic. The voice of the Lord breaks the cedars. Yes, the Lord breaks in pieces the cedars of Lebanon. He makes Lebanon skip like a calf and Sirion like a young wild ox. Well, these four verses talk about the voice of the Lord, and the voice of the Lord is thunder, as John Gill points out. The pagans thought that thunder indicated that the gods were angry, but David, on the contrary, sees thunder as showing the power and majesty of God. And so thunder is spoken of metaphorically as the voice of the Lord. When we hear thunder, we're hearing God speak. Now, this voice is upon the waters, David says in verse 3. What waters? Well, the clouds, because the clouds are full of waters and the thunder's up in the sky where the clouds are. So the voice of the Lord is upon the waters, as Adam Clark and Jameson Fawcett and Brown point out. So the God of glory thunders. The Lord is over many waters. Verse 4, the voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is majestic. Verse 5, the voice of the Lord breaks the cedars. The thunder is so loud that it splits the cedars of Lebanon. And when we hear the phrase cedar of Lebanon, we should put our shoes in the people of Israel's shoes and think about how they think about the cedars of Lebanon. It's just like we think of the redwoods of California. Big, huge, monstrous, strong cedars, because that's where all the wood came from Lebanon, when they wanted to build a temple, for example. Hiram, king of Tyre, floated his logs on down the Mediterranean Sea, and they brought them on into Israel so they could build the temple. And so in verse 5, God's voice is so loud, bang, that the cedars break. Now again, that's poetic. That makes sense. Loud sound will break cedars, but it could be that since lightning actually accompanies thunder, lightning could have actually split the cedars. This is my idea. But Adam Clark adds, very tall trees attract the lightning from the clouds, by which they are often torn to pieces. So Clark has the same idea, actually. But whatever he meant, the cedars are broken. That shows how powerful God is, because it's not easy to break one of those cedars. Verse 6, God makes Lebanon skip like a calf. Well, how can Lebanon skip like a calf? Well, it's obviously not the country. Could be referring to the mountains of Lebanon. The thunder booms and the mountains jump. So they skip like a calf. They hop along the ground like a calf hopping along the ground. Or it could refer to the cedars of Lebanon are hopping up and down on the ground, even as calves do when they jump about in their play. John Gill suggests it's mountains of Lebanon. Jameson Foster and Brown suggests the cedars of Lebanon. Whatever it is, we get the idea. God's lightning is making things hop. And then, in verse 6, David says, Sirion like a young wild ox. He makes Lebanon skip like a calf and Sirion skip like a young wild ox. What is Sirion? This is a good Bible trivia question. Sirion is what the Sidonians called Mount Hermon. Now, of course, Mount Hermon is a very famous mountain, and the Sidonians are on the coast of Lebanon, and that city on the coast of Lebanon, right north of Tyre, very famous. That was just how they called it in the native language, Syrian. So David uses the uses the native language for Sirion. Let me read you from Easton's about Mount Hermon. It was a peak, the eastern prolongation of the anti-Lebanon range. Let me just tell you how this works. If you look at the eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea, and you go to the northern part of that eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea, when you hit land, that's Syria. You go south of Syria, still on the Mediterranean Sea, you're in Lebanon. You go south of Lebanon, you're in Israel. So three countries make up the coastline of the eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea. Lebanon is in the middle. If you go in to Lebanon toward the east, you'll hit a pair of parallel mountain ranges. The first mountain range you hit is the Lebanon Range. You go past that range and you're in a valley right before you get to the second mountain range. The second mountain range is called the Anti-Lebanon Range. You get on that mountain range and you go south toward Israel. You get to the very south and there's a big mountain at the tip of that Anti-Lebanon Range. That's Mount Hermon. It's full of snow. Always has snow. You can still see it. I looked it up on Google Earth one day just to see it, and there it is. Big mountain full of snow. It's mentioned all the time in the New Testament. Mount Hermon, Easton's continues, reaches to the height of about 9,200 feet above the Mediterranean Sea. That's pretty high, almost to the point where you have to have oxygen when you get to the top of that. It marks the north boundary of Palestine and is seen from a great distance. It is about 40 miles north of the Sea of Galilee. It is called the Hermonites in Psalm 42, verse 6, because it has more than one summit. The Sidonians called it Sirion. It's a big mountain, 9,200 feet tall, but doesn't matter. God's thunder, his voice will make that mountain skip like a young wild ox. David continues in verses 7 through 9. The voice of the Lord hews out flames of fire. The voice of the Lord shakes the wilderness. The Lord shakes the wilderness of Kadesh. The voice of the Lord makes the deer to calve and strips the forest bare. And in his temple, everything says glory. Verse 7, David says the voice of the Lord hews out flames of fire. It's like flakes and splinters coming out of hewn stone or hewn wood. As the blade hits the stone and the sparks fly. The NIV makes it easier to understand. That translation says the voice of the Lord strikes with flashes of lightning. In fact, that's what fire means. Oftentimes when you see fire in the Old Testament, immediately put lightning in there, because that's, I would say, most of the time is what it means, is lightning. And the NIV translates it that way, as lightning. The voice of the Lord strikes with flashes of lightning. That makes sense, because the voice of the Lord is thunder, and accompanying thunder, of course, you have lightning. Verse 8, the voice of the Lord shakes the wilderness. That's the thunder, shakes the wilderness. The Lord shakes the wilderness of Kadesh. Now, what is Kadesh? Kadesh is Kadesh Barnea, which I'm sure you've heard of in the Old Testament. Gill gives a summary explanation of Kadesh. He says it was the terrible wilderness that the children of Israel passed through to Canaan's land, the same with the wilderness of Tsin, and was called Kadesh from the city of that name on the borders of Edom. So just go to the Dead Sea from Jerusalem at the north of the Dead Sea and keep going south. Keep going south until you get somewhere near the south of the Dead Sea, the tip, and that's where Edom starts. Well, right there on the border of Edom and Israel was Kadesh Barnea. Let me give you some more about that, because this is a famous city that we ought to know about. This is from Easton's Dictionary. Kadesh means holy. It's the sacred desert of wandering, a place on the southeastern border of Palestine, about 165 miles from Horeb, Mount Sinai. It lay in the wilderness, a desert of Zin. It was on the border of Edom. From this place, in compliance with the desire of the people, Moses sent forth 12 spies to spy the land. After examining it in all its districts, the spies brought back an evil report, Joshua and Caleb alone giving a good report of the land. Influenced by the discouraging report, the people abandoned all hope of entering into the promised land. They remained a considerable time at Kadesh. Because of their unbelief, they were condemned by God to wander for 38 years in the wilderness. They took their journey from Kadesh into the deserts of Paran by the way of the Red Sea. The desert of Paran was right south of the desert of Sin, so they went south. Easton's continues, one theory is that during these 38 years they remained in and about Kadesh. In other words, nobody knows where they wandered for 38 years, but they started at Kadesh at least, and maybe they just went around in circles at Kadesh. At the end of these years of wanderings, the tribes were a second time gathered together at Kadesh. During their stay here at this time, Miriam died and was buried. Here the people murmured for want of water, as their forefathers had formerly done at Rephidim. And Moses, irritated by their chidings, with his rod smote the rock twice, instead of speaking to the rock before their eyes as the Lord had commanded him. Because of this act of his, in which Aaron too was involved, neither of them was to be permitted to set foot within the promised land. The king of Edom would not permit them to pass on through his territory, therefore they commenced an eastward march and came into Mount Hor, where Aaron died, and so forth. So you see, a lot of Old Testament history, a lot of Exodus history happened at Kadesh Barnea, and that's what David is referring to here. When he would say the wilderness of Kadesh, everybody reading the psalm would know, or hearing the psalm, would know exactly what he's talking about. Verse 9, the voice of the Lord makes the deer to calve. Thunder will do that to deer, makes them calve. I just read an interesting story in the news. Woman was fishing with her husband and father-in-law in Florida, off the coast, and all of a sudden this monstrously big spotted stingray flew out of the water, hit the woman, and crashed into her boat. What had happened was a sucker fish had attached itself to the stingray, and the stingray took its standard evasive maneuvers, which was to fly up into the air where the fish was not used to being, and then land back in the water, and the fish would let loose. Unfortunately, the stingray took off into the air and landed in a boat by accident. Well, the stingray got so scared that the stingray gave birth to 4 premature baby stingrays, which later died, unfortunately. And when the fisherwoman took the ray, they couldn't get the stingray out of the boat. It weighed 400 pounds. So they took it to the shore, and there was a marine wildlife type organization there, and the official in charge said, oh yes, you scare an animal like this, they will give birth prematurely to their young. The idea is that the young will survive. If the mother is in danger, the mother says, well, I might die, but my kids are going to live. That's the way God keeps the species going. Of course, sometimes they're premature and they don't live, but sometimes they're not and they do live. So what David says fits with modern science. The voice of the Lord makes the deer to calve. I'm telling you, you hear lightning and thunder in the wilderness as I have, it's almost enough to make me have a baby. And of course now, the woke left says that men can get pregnant, so maybe I could get pregnant and have a baby in a lightning storm. The voice of the Lord also strips the forest bare. How is that possible? Well, Adam Clark suggests that what happens is the lightning associated with the voice of the Lord, the thunder, the lightning lights up the forest, making the forest evident to the eye like someone or something that is stripped. You strip clothes off of someone, you can see their naked body, you strip the darkness off a forest, and you can see the forest pretty clearly. I prefer to look at it this way. I didn't get this from anybody, but the way I look at it is if the voice of the Lord strips a forest, it's like the strong wind in the storm stripping the leaves off the trees so that you don't see leaves anymore, you just see branches. That's what I think David is talking about. I could be wrong. At any rate, we get the idea of a huge lightning storm illustrating the strength of the Lord. And then in verse 9, David says, and in his temple, everything says glory. Well, what's God's temple? Well, it could be heaven, because after all, David is talking about things that happen up there in the sky, the thunderstorm. So that makes sense to say it's heaven, because God lives in heaven in his temple. Temple is a place where God lives. Or it could be the tabernacle. David is called the tabernacle temple at least twice in previous Psalms. Unfortunately, I don't have the sites, but I remember this from my memory. And so what David is saying, everything in the tabernacle is saying glory. All the sacrificial cultus ritual that's going on inside the tabernacle is all saying glory to God. I prefer to think it's everything in heaven saying glory to God because of the context of the thunderstorm. Now, before I leave this, verse 9, the voice of the Lord makes the deer to calve. I forgot to mention that there's an alternate translation of makes the deer to calve. The NIV translates it as the voice of the Lord twists the oaks. Well, that's close enough. It gives the same idea of power and strength. We go now to Psalms 29, verses 10 through 11, and we'll finish this audio. The Lord sat as a king at the flood. Yes, the Lord sits as king forever, David continues. The Lord will give strength to his people. The Lord will bless his people with peace. The Lord sat as king at the flood. What flood? Well, here are some options given by the NIV Study Bible. Option number one, over the formless waters in Genesis 1 at the creation. God's word rules over all creation, the waters that were created at creation, the flood of waters that covered all the land. Option number two, and Gill agrees with this, or at least suggested as an option, the Lord sat as king at Noah's flood, because God was ruling and judging over the whole world during the time of Noah's flood, especially the bad guys. I think that's probably the answer right there. Or it could refer more locally to flash floods caused by sudden cloud bursts. We're in the midst of a thunderstorm here, so the Lord sat as king at the flood. Flash floods, they had those in those wadis. They would fill up and drown people. I can see any of those three options as being worthy of acceptance. The Lord sits as king forever. King, Lord. The Lord will give strength to his people. In verse 11, the Lord will bless his people with peace. And as usual, David ends his psalm on a high note. That word bless there, when it's talking about God blessing his people, it means he will give us something good. And the good thing that God gives us is his peace. It's interesting. All the noise and furor of a thunderstorm ends up by giving God's people peace, which occurs after a thunderstorm. And of course, the thunderstorm is used to judge God's enemies and David's enemies. This is one of the few psalms that we've encountered so far by David in which David does not mention his enemies. He just mentions the glory of God and the peace that goes to God's people. So ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished Psalms 29. This prepares us to go to Psalms 30. Psalms 30 we will entitle Joy Comes with the Morning. I hope you stay tuned for that psalm, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.